Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
When knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. When knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme to our quite something able. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
I'm sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. Is there ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Thank you.
No pleasure here on earth I find. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps you'll die upon this train.
You can bury me in Sunday Valley. For many years will I may lay. Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Hey, hey, King Shazam's the Turtle.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms to talk in. I'm almost too tired to do this show. Kind of frustrated, aggravated, I don't know, it's just, it's another one of those days, I guess, but, looking through the headlines of the world, you know, has the world gone mad, literally? I mean, over there in, I guess, Charlottesville, Virginia, people over there rioting with each other, and... small group of individuals all over the world trying to fix the world, while other people in the world are just too busy fighting with one another. You know, there's a lot of brilliant individuals out there, a lot of talented people all over this planet that could be doing something really amazing. But to gather them up is probably one of the most impossible tasks I've ever seen in my life. This world has so much potential. You know, you got those that dream about going to other worlds. I don't think I'd want to let anybody leave this planet and go to another planet. You know, if you believe planets exist or whatever, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me anyway. But why would you want to send people from this planet to another planet to make a bunch of more craziness on... I'm starting to sound like one of those people who think that mankind is a plague on this planet. It just, it's aggravating. When you see the potential of what this world could be, as opposed to what it is, it's really frustrating. Because I watch a lot of YouTube videos out there of all different types of subjects under the sun. And... If you sit back with an honest mind and just watch and listen, you'll hear a whole bunch of labels that people put on each other. And now, if you hear any kind of labels out there, I don't care what kind they are, you know, whether it be liberal or conservative or the new alt-right one, it just makes me sick. It don't roll off. I don't know. The mainstream media spits out these labels. And people run with these labels. They label each other, you know. White supremacist and, white privilege and Black Lives Matter and all the craziness that that the mainstream media spews out. And even in the alternative media. The alternative media is gradually becoming the mainstream media. And in the process of becoming the mainstream media, it is basically dragging the old bad habits with it. It's sad but true. You know, there's a lot of YouTube channels out there and a lot of networks that they just thrive on fear-mongering. You know, send us your money, send us your donations. If you like these videos, pay me some money. Give me some money on the Patreon account or donate to my cause. There's not too many people out there that are doing it just to be because it's the right thing to do. There's a lot of individuals out there that are doing it because they just want to make money. You know, I teeter-totter back and forth to wanting to literally delete my entire presence on the internet. I mean, just wipe out this radio show and erase my YouTube and Facebook and all that kind of stuff and just never get on this thing again. But I think sometimes if all the good people of the world stop trying to promote peace and love and happiness, that it's all just gone downhill. You could take a look at all the trending stories on any of the social media networks, YouTube being one of the main ones, because basically it's a bunch of video creators and people out there trying to make news or whatever. And a lot of them are because of YouTube's financial situation starting to ask everybody for money. Hey, give us some money. Buy my t-shirt. Is buying this person's t-shirt actually going to help? Is it going to make this world better? Giving this person money to make videos and bring you the news around the world, which most generally ends up being bad news. You know, we're being told now that North Korea has nuclear weapons that want to blow us up. So that's the next boogeyman. And so, my suggestion is go watch that video series Jericho. And you'll notice, if you pay attention, something in that video that might just surprise you. North Korea was supposedly the ones that in this video series nuked the U.S. But I won't spoil it for you. In the end, it was some of our own people that did it. This world is, I don't know. You got people supposedly at anti-racism rallies, and you got agitators at these rallies, a group called Antifa, anti-fascist group. They go around, they start trouble everywhere they go. And it's getting to the point where there's other people that, are tired of being called racist all the time, that they're, gathering. Of course, now the mainstream media, they'll eat this up real fast. That's where the whole alt-right thing came in, And just perpetuating and breeding racism is all it does. So my suggestion to anyone listening to this show, if you hear terminology like alt-right, you need to run from them people. If you're the one out there spewing the alt-right or the white supremacist or the racist propaganda, even the Black Lives Matter, then you're just perpetuating it. That's all there is to it. You know, none of the history that we've got in this world is perfect from any nation. And until people learn to, stop labeling each other. They say that, some folks say they don't see color. They don't see a difference between, this person and that person. But the mainstream media and even the alternative media and those who profess to want equality to the world, they make sure that you can not see a difference. And that's one of the biggest problems. That even if you wanted to be colorblind and not be able to see the colors of someone's skin, there's always someone out there who wants to remind you, to make you feel bad for what you look like or what your ancestors may have had been involved in. And so until those chains are broken, it's going to be exactly like the story that I mentioned on the show at one point when the reporter asked the two little Palestinian girls, do you ever want peace with Israel? And they said, no, we hate Israel because they killed our mommy and daddy. Now, if you think about that, and then you flip that coin over to the other side of the fence, ask a question to a couple Israeli girls about the Palestinian girls, you might just get the same exact answer. So, the mainstream media's been pitting the left against the right. The government's been pitting you against your neighbors and your friends and your family. Paul Harvey said it in 1965. He said he'd have nations warring against each other, churches warring against each other, people warring against each other. If he were the devil, he'd just keep on doing what he's doing. You got so many people out there that are battling amongst each other, can't agree on anything. And in the meantime, we're watching as our world just kind of deteriorates and fades off. Now I sit here and I tell people, we can fix this thing. We really could. If we seriously wanted to make the effort, we could. But we're up against a power, a darkness that is so vast. It has embedded itself in the skin of humanity. It is just literally tearing this world apart. I don't like being the bearer of bad news. I don't like even talking about all of this negativity in the world. Because I honestly believe that we have a chance to fix this stuff. The only way to get it done is to bring people to the table. And if they're too busy out there running into crowds with cars and fighting amongst each other because, they don't see eye to eye. I don't know what they're teaching kids in college these days. But it ain't doing very good. Most of these places where you see all these riots, look it up. Most of them's in college towns. Most of them's a bunch of young people that are fighting against the system but supporting the system at the same exact time. The anti-Antifa and anti-fascist, And they're out there protesting against Trump. Well, people get tired of them protesting against Trump, and they go out and they protest for Trump. And they've put this man so high up on a pedestal that, the ones who believe in Trump, they're going to go all out. And the ones who don't believe in it, they're going to go all out. And so, you got people in college towns that are literally fighting over our president. President of our United States. We didn't like the last president, or we did like the last president, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who's actually up there in the White House. It really matters who's in the Senate and the Congress and the court systems and in charge of law enforcement and such. And it really matters what the people are doing. But what are the people doing? You know, the young people are out there in the streets, they're protesting, and protests get violent, they end up tearing stuff up, police come in dressed like the army man, and basically to restore order or not. And if you watch these protests, it's ridiculous, because literally the police will stand idly by until things get completely out of hand. Then and only then will they jump in. So the purpose of being there, it's, in my mind, it's worthless. What's the point? You might as well just let them go out there, just fight it out. When it's all said and done, go out there and clean up the mess. That's it. This is just pure ridiculousness. The whole world appears to, at least through the videos and the pictures portrayed by the mainstream media and even some of those in the alternative media, is that the world is in chaos. Maybe the world is in chaos. Maybe it's a self-inflicted disease of epic proportions, and humanity's just finally going down the hill, going over the falls in the barrel, so to speak. There's a lot of brilliant individuals out there. I keep talking about this all the time. A lot of talent in this world. A lot of things could be accomplished if you could actually gather the right people together and just start working at things. You could do so much. There's so much resources available in this world. It's just mind-blowing. So for me, it doesn't make no sense to see this world tear itself apart. And it's so frustrating that you become discouraged and you start to lose faith and believe that it is possible to fix this world. So it's like a roller coaster ride. This whole going out and trying to be a motivational speaker for those out there who are lost and frustrated with the world. It's really like emotional roller coaster, trying to keep that ball rolling. It's not a one man job. It's a Knights of the Round Table job. But after years of doing the Knights of the Round Table, sometimes people show up and sometimes they don't. You know, there's this movie out there, and they talk about in the movie, build it and they will come, and we built it. Still waiting for them to show up. Still waiting for the world to decide that it's time. It's time to fix the world. I mean, what possesses somebody with a crazy haircut over there in North Korea to want to nuke the world? Doesn't that individual realize that if he throws a nuke, somebody else throws a nuke, and somebody didn't like it because they throw a nuke, and they'll throw one, and, you know, it's perpetual idiocy is what it is. You know, people out there talking about save the planet. Save the planet. What you really need to do is figure out a way to save humanity. That's the big issue on the table. Now, you can see the planet's sick. It's sick because we're sick. It's sick because we're not paying attention and we're not working in harmony with it. The things that we could do, the things that we could accomplish. If you pay attention to what this world is doing, and you decide that you want to learn from that and actually work alongside of nature and one another, there isn't nothing in this world that we couldn't accomplish. They should be teaching that in school. What about whatever they're teaching in the college dorm or college classes or whatever? It must be sheer idiocy. I'd love to go sit in a few of these classes and just listen in. Just listen what the supposed professors are professing to the children. Because all I've seen so far is people running out there spreading propaganda and using buzzwords like alt-right and white supremacist or whatever. The moment I hear any of those buzzwords that I've heard on the mainstream media, my attention just drops. I don't listen anymore. I don't take them serious. I can't take them serious because the mainstream media and the governments of the world have lied so much. And they have literally taken the power out of the word racist. They've taken the power out of the word racism. So, the term alt-right, it doesn't mean anything. Liberal, doesn't mean anything. Conservative, doesn't mean anything. All the labels and the terminology that the mainstream media has basically taken away, it's like the boy who cried wolf kind of thing. Boy's up on the hill and for fun, he just shouts, wolf, 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 and everybody comes running. Well, after doing that several times, eventually people said, he's just up there jacking around again, and so they don't come running. And so when people in the mainstream media and on the liberal side of everything use terminology like racist or white supremacist or alt-right or whatever, I don't listen anymore because they've cried it so many times. You know, if somebody's really a racist, they'll show their colors, they'll show their true self. But to basically paint everybody with a wide brush and say this guy, because of his color, his skin, he's got special privileges that this guy over here don't. Mainstream media told you that, and you repeated it as if it was the gospel. Somebody out there did a video called Zeitgeist. And in the process of doing this video called Zeitgeist, they basically destroyed people's faith all over the place. Trying to equate this with that and say that this was stolen from that religion or whatever. And there are some folks out there that hate religion so bad, they hate anything to do with faith or God or whatever. They hate it so bad that you can't bring that subject up to them, because suddenly, you know, they'll go into what they were told in the movie Zeitgeist, or what they were told by somebody who just flat out hates anything to do with God. Some hardcore atheist that doesn't, believe that there's a God, who will stand out there in front of thousands of individuals and just foul mouth, say the filthiest things, and people will still come and watch this guy. He's on YouTube. If you want to see the sickness, just look up the Amazing Atheist. He's disgusting. But people watch him. For whatever reason, they entertain that, or that entertains them. And so what Paul Harvey said back in 1965 was so on the mark. I mean, he called it just like it is. And because he was so close, I'm going to say, you know, that's nearly prophetic what he said. And so, I just, I just have to ask myself, is this all worth it? And that's the roller coaster. That's the whole thing. Though, Stephen said in the chat room, said, good morning, Shaziz. No, bro, if you look at our recorded history, mate, the world has always been mad. It is not recent phenomenon that the world has been insane for a very long time. There's a fine line between genius and madness. How do you decide where one begins and one ends? Tesla and the Wright brothers were considered insane at their time. Yeah, there was a lot of inventors out there that they thought were crazy. I mean, come on, if you wanted to fly, there were people that actually said that, you know, if God wanted you to fly, he'd have gave you wings and such. You know, granted, I believe that probably throughout the entirety of history that this world, starting from the very first murder in my book of faith about, you know, Cain and Abel, first person killed was with a rock. And it was over greed. And maybe that was the domino, the tip that next thing you know, everybody's fighting with each other. They're warring with each other's nations and neighbors and conquering one another. The whole history of the history is of abuse and conquering and fighting and everything. So maybe I'm born before my time. Maybe I don't belong in this time frame. Because I see something that maybe I shouldn't see. Maybe I wished I couldn't see. I see a potential for a world that doesn't have war, famine, or plagues, or pestilence, or all this craziness. Honestly, if there was a spaceship large enough to take my family and leave this planet, I'd be gone. It's just... I would just jump on that thing and fly off and find an unpopulated planet somewhere. It could be a potential that we may not even be able to leave, and even if we wanted to, we probably couldn't leave. But nonetheless, since we're stuck here, I'm thinking maybe we ought to try to make this world better. And so, that's what we do. We try to use words of wisdom to motivate people in this world to thrive, strive towards a better day for all of humanity. You know, I don't agree with all of what happened in the past, but I can't do nothing about people's mistakes. The best I can do with what I have as far as my life is to try to lead a positive and a good life, to be an example to others around me. I can't even get them to follow that example. They have to do that themselves. They have to want to follow that example. There's a lot of people out there on YouTube that I talk about on the Mad Science Show and on the Knights of the Round Table a lot, because I watch the things that they do and the things that they make, you know, and how they, some of them repurpose old things and make something else out of it, and it's always impressive to me to see that somebody, instead of wasting something in this world, they utilized it for a good purpose and taught somebody how to do that. If you go Google up the phrase repurposing and recycling, you'd be surprised what you find. A lot of people come up with brilliant ideas to use all kinds of things. And to me, that's a step moving forward. That's starting to sound like an old hippie, you know, peace and love. Can't we all just get along and, you know, go out and recycle, hug your trees, and so on. I'm just trying to put some common sense back into a world that's gone mad, chaotic. And maybe it's already been mad. Maybe I just hadn't recognized it, but it just seems to me that it seems to escalate. Year by year, things keep getting worse. I don't know what they're teaching these kids in school, in college anymore. But why people think it's necessary to go out there in public and start fighting with one another, tearing up their own communities, or getting arrested, or hitting each other with sticks, or pepper spray, or whatever. And for somebody to drive their car deliberately into a crowd of people and take somebody's life, infuriating the rest of the crowd into just everything. You know, right beside each other, and a couple thumbnails out there, there's two pieces of technology. One is an atomic warhead, and the other one is a manned quadcopter chair that a person built. So one's a cool toy there, or two even, that you can fly around in, and one is one that you can send up in the air and it will come down and produce a lot of destruction. That's the choice that we got, whether we use the knowledge and the technology that we've acquired through all the years of our lives and families and everything. We use it, the tools for weapons of war, the tools for advancements. You see, I can see a lot that could be come from it's a manned quadcopter chair. It's pretty neat. But if you need to get somewhere quickly, you can pretty much land this thing anywhere. And the person that designed it are the people that I'm talking about. They're the people that I look for. I want to see those kind of people come together. The backyard inventors and the creators and the artists and the, you know, the people that have the talents and just like to make and build things. That's what I believe our Creator put us down here for. To see how far we could go. Not to see how far we could tear each other down. It's easy to go out and destroy things. Takes a little bit more time and patience to go out and create things. Do something positive for the world. You got people out there arguing on whether the earth is flat or round. You got people out there arguing over the left versus right. It's just ridiculousness. North Korean nuclear weapon development. You want to give a madman with a bad haircut a nuclear weapon? He's always talking about blowing somebody up. At least that's what the mainstream media says. As far as we know, because very few of us have ever been there, he might actually be a nice guy. I don't know. I can't believe nothing that the government or the mainstream media says. I can't even believe anything that the alternative media says. I can't believe anything that anyone says without researching it to, you know, check the facts. You know, supposedly this month there's going to be a solar eclipse. And there's actually a deal, Operation Black Skies, eclipse and military involved, where the military is going to follow the shadow of the eclipse. The purpose unknown, I guess NASA wants to learn something from it. It's supposed to be a rare eclipse. Anyway, it's turned in from, you know, maybe a solar eclipse to a bunch of fear mongering. People were saying that, oh yeah, this is like Planet X is coming in and it's going to blast us and you're all going to die. Well, if that's the case, there ain't nothing you can do about it anyway, because if it is a giant planet that's coming in to destroy the Earth, then you're doomed anyway. And what do you got to show for all the time that you spent here? Sad but true, some folks ain't got nothing to show for nothing, because they spent their time running around, running amok, acting like a fool. And so they don't have to worry about it. You know, I saw a video that was just so disturbing. And it was actually set over in Australia. But essentially, they found out that the world was going to literally end in, I don't know, 2 days or something like that. And the way that people treated each other, the way that they acted, was so incredibly disturbing that I hope and pray that never happens. The things that people did to each other because the world was coming to an end. And the scary part about that whole process is somebody wrote that story. Somebody made that movie. You know? The Stephen Kings of the world. The ones that make all the scary monster movies, like Freddy Krueger, people running around cutting each other up, or the movie Scream, where they run around stabbing each other. That's the scary part about it. The things that Hollywood get by with putting out there, and that people classify as entertainment, you have to question somebody just who loves to see somebody else get hurt. It's, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it's disturbing that people find amusement in harming one another. Find amusement in harming animals. The terrible things that people do to one another and eat and to the to the planet, to the animals, to whatever, is disturbing to me. Yeah, I don't profess to be some sort of saint. I'm not. I'm not even special. In the grand scheme of things, I ain't nothing. Zero, zilch, nada. Just a individual with a lot of crazy ideas, I guess. But I don't want to write stories about people hurting each other. I don't want to write stories about war and destruction or negativity. I would honestly like to see what we could actually accomplish working together. Not working together because somebody forced you to do it. But working together because you realize that that's the only way we're ever going to get anything done. Teamwork. That's the only way you're going to fix this world. And if you can't unite all the brilliant minds of the world, then you'll never get this world to turn around. I don't want this to be some sort of government effort to go around and force people to think a certain way. To try to take away a person's free will or freedom or sovereignty, whatever you want to call it. I want it because the good people of the world decide, looking back in history, that everything tried before failed. You can't force somebody to change their mind by going out protesting. You can't force somebody by calling them a racist or the alt-right or the liberal or the conservative. You can't force them by telling them that they can't believe or they shouldn't believe or whatever cause that they want to believe in or whatever religion. Every time I hear anybody throw any of those terminologies in there, in my mind, the conversation is over. When people start bashing religion in me, the conversation just ended. It's no longer a conversation. It now becomes an argument or a debate. And it's the argument and debate that always ends up the same doggone way. Nobody ever wins. It always ends up the same way, every time. You agree to disagree and you walk away. The things that we should be agreeing upon, that we need to clean our planet and that we need to take care of one another, that we need to be good caretakers and to see how far that humanity could literally excel and what we could become, those are the things that really matter. The things that we leave behind for the people that will be the future generations, the people that will be here long after you and I listening are gone. And all these terminologies, these words that we call one another, these labels that we place on each other, these things that we argue about are nothing more than insignificant wastes of time. If you haven't learned anything from it, then it was pointless to begin with. So I'm sorry, friends. Brothers and sisters out there, if you ever tell me anything about the alt-right, you lost my attention. The liberals, the conservatives, the whatever, all these terminologies out there. If you group a people together and you label them, you lost my attention. And so save your breath and don't even worry about trying to tell me about it, because I'm not listening anyway. And the same thing would apply with any kind of religion or anything like that. If it has a label attached to it and it paints everybody with a wide brush, then it's pointless. The only way that we're ever going to fix anything in this world is to go out there and find all those brilliant individuals. Bring them together and get things done to show the rest of the world how it can be done. The only other option is just to let the status quo play itself out. Let the wars and the rumors of wars and the plagues and the famines and the pestilence and all the disease and destruction and death and chaos just play itself out. Then we find out in the end who was right and who was wrong. But if this turns out to be a great experiment to see whether or not you put a bunch of people together, whether or not they'd be able to figure it out and work together, so far humanity has failed. The experiment isn't going well because people are still hurting each other. People are still lying and stealing and robbing and raping and looting and pillaging and doing all the things that Paul Harvey talked about in 1965. It's crazy because in 1965 I was born. So I got here just in time to hear Paul Harvey say that the world was going to heck in a handbasket. And that if he were the devil, he'd keep on doing what he's doing. I'm sitting here and I'm looking out at the world as a new arrival, thinking, oh my, what did I get myself into? Send me back to wherever I came from. I don't want to be here. And I watched throughout the entirety of my lifetime of people hurting each other and people hurting me. And I watched the misery unfold before my very eyes, all the way up to the present day. I've seen it all. I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes upon. And I'm thinking to myself, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be something in this world worthy of saving. There's got to be some sort of goodness that can overcome all the darkness that I have witnessed throughout the entirety of my life. And in my personal life, I found God. And God was my anchor. To this very day is my anchor. Because nothing else makes sense. And so I'm thinking, if God's existence is real for me, and that's my peace in this world, and I can look out and I can see all the beauty and all the potential and all the possibilities of things that could be resolved if we only decided to utilize this gift in a proper manner. And so I wanted to spread that to the world. I want to put that idea out there. I want to plant that seed of hope. And try to get this world to move in that direction. Not by force, but out of love. You can't force somebody to believe in goodness. You have to show them how it works. You have to show them by your deeds and your actions. And then somebody says, if you gotta talk the talk, you gotta walk the walk, you gotta talk the talk, or however that phrase comes down to be. It's so important. And there are a lot of people out there, a lot of good people that really seriously try to do just that. And we need more. We need more Knights of the Round Table. We need more people coming to the table. We need more people talking. We need more people figuring out methods by which to help one another out. People taking journeys to foreign nations and helping uplift those individuals and feed them and show them how to house themselves and, you know, take care of one another. The things I've seen in my life, I don't ever want to see repeated. I've seen some terrible things. Like I said, I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. And those things disturbed me so badly that I felt the need that I need to go out there and try to get this world to, if not, at least be able to see through my eyes, to at least understand the possibilities of what we could accomplish if we chose to do so. I've been told everything under the sun. I've been told I'm standing on a soapbox and I'm preaching to the choir. But if I stop saying what I feel in my heart that's supposed to be said and needs to be said, then all those journeys and everything that I witnessed throughout my entire lifetime was pointless. There was no purpose in me living all that. No purpose for me to see all that if I'm not going to be trying to warn somebody against repeating all that. I can't turn a blind eye to the darkness, and I can't turn a blind eye to evil when I know that it's creeping up on humanity in the way that it is. For a man like Paul Harvey to say what he did in that time frame must have been a warning flag for the rest of the world, that he saw that things would be deteriorating so badly that if we didn't get our act together, that would be the world that we live in. And surprise, folks, we're there. What we saw in 1965 coming, what we heard Paul Harvey say, we're living it today. You can jump over there on YouTube or Google or Facebook or any of them and you can see it. Everything that the man said, you can see it. In the good book that people despise, it literally spoke of these times. Wars and rumors of wars, plagues and famines and pestilences. So, somebody wrote a book that was trying to warn humanity. Somebody said a speech that was trying to warn humanity. Throughout the entirety of the world, there's always been somebody in the background saying, look, folks, look, we got to stop this. But when is the world going to listen? When is the world going to take it all to heart? When is the world going to start caring about each other enough to not do the things that they do to one another? If you walk in perfect harmony with nature, nature will love you back. That's a fact. If you work alongside nature, you'll watch your land and the people on that land find peace and find a balance. And once the scales tip to the point where there ain't no balance, then you'll find the chaos. Just like this world has a life, just like you have a life, it all comes hand in hand. If your body becomes sick, it begins to die. And when this world becomes sick, it will begin to die as well. When it has no other purpose other than to try to shake off a disease, you know, people call, and I even get frustrated when people say it. People call humans parasites. I don't believe that. I refuse to believe that. We're not parasites. We're children of a divine creator that are making some really bad choices. We're not parasites. We weren't designed to be parasites. And some people believe that we literally evolved from monkeys. Well, in some incidents, you're making them, you're proving them right. I don't even think the monkeys treat each other as poorly as humans do. There's some individuals out there that have some wonderful ideas and skills and artisticness. And you look out there at all the resources out there, just the recycling portion of it. We could recycle so much in this world, there should be zero waste in this world. No matter what it is, food or whatever, it doesn't matter what it is, everything could be recycled. There's absolutely no reason to keep gutting this earth for new resources when you already have more than you'll ever need for everything. Humanity's got to stop wasting. We got to learn to get along. Now I'm sure, though, you know, long after I'm gone, somebody else will see the problems and they'll come to the table. And they'll say it. And nobody will listen. It'll fall on deaf ears. The fact that there's nations still warring against each other is proof positive of that. There ain't no reason to go over and destroy a nation. There ain't no reason to destroy one another. But for some reason, mankind chooses to continue that cycle. As far as the search for free energy and alternative medicines and alternative to the system out there, the answers are all there on the table, just waiting for people. Waiting for people to take those solutions and implement them. And someday, whenever things get the way that worse than what they are now, someday people will just give up. They'll walk away. And that's a shame. It's a shame to see the true potential of what humanity could become just go by the wayside. If you do a search on Charlottesville, Virginia, you'll see a bunch of headlines pop up. Riots break out in Charlottesville, Virginia. Riots, protesters, what's the point? What is the point? What are these people trying to accomplish? What are they trying to prove? And they're calling it Charlottesville race riots, staged by government. People out there warning you. Somebody out there instigating. There's the key word right there again. Charlottesville alt-right rally turns violent. Mass protest. Civil unrest. Race war. Coming riots break out in Charlottesville. Violent protest in Virginia, state of emergency. And they even got the KKK and the Nazi rallies, is what they're saying on there. Charlottesville, Virginia. Trump supporters. You notice how they always want to try to lump in the labels with the Trump supporters? What are they teaching those kids in school? Seriously. And why is our police department looking identical to the military? It's just, what's the point?
Thank you. crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stumble road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready.
Zip. Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's only seed.
Aziz the Terrible. All rise for King Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Stephen Gibbons posted a funny picture in the chat room. It's got a scorpion holding a sign that says free hugs, and he says, I think someone needs a hug. Oh my, what were we talking about? Just, oh yeah, by the way, I got joined nearby Honorable Knight Barbara Three Crow here, so welcome her to the show. So we were talking just a minute before we come on air about how easy it is to get discouraged in this world. I mean, you know, it's like a roller coaster ride from you know where. What do you think?
Well, hi, Shaziz. Yeah, you know, I guess every day it's sort of like we wake up to some, you know, 2x4 trying to
Down. That's it's a like good analogy.
People are wielding these 2x4s and, you know, it's kind of like a real challenge. It's getting more and more of a challenge. And this particular one about what went on, you know, with the people down there in Virginia, and it's kind of stunning, but I'm not surprised in a way. I think that this is where things have been moving towards. There's been, you know, signs of this, and, you know, I'm not going to say there's anybody to blame. Like, you know, some people say, well, Trump opened that doorway. I mean, I've said that myself, but I also added that this has been festering, this type of thing, you know, the pitting against each other and the hatred and the racism, which I don't like to use that term, but I guess you'd say the opposing perspectives of rights or even just opposing perspective of, well, I'm on the top and you're on the bottom. You have not, you know, you're not even a person, or I'm the person, or I'm the right person, or this is nothing new. You know, so it's kind of, it is talking about discouraging. We get hit with this stuff, and we're, you know, you say, well, we're working very hard. We feel like we've made a couple steps forward, or feels like that. It seems like that. And then wham, here comes that 2x4 and, well, down, sliding back down again. Like, you know, we're all trying to get to the sacred mountain, and then you got all these 2x4s whacking at you on your journey, and slide back down the hill. It's kind of hard, but I just, when you said that, how discouraged you feel, and I said, yeah, I feel it is discouraging, but then something, I got something else that came in that moment, and I felt this energy like a, sort of like a, It's almost like a, well, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm sure you've had this happen when you're like really in a down place and suddenly it's sort of like, well, I'll give you an example. My sister and I and my parents, we were on a journey to my grandparents' house years ago, and it was night and there was a heavy storm, thunder and lightning and heavy rain, and we were on a back road, and, suddenly my father slammed on the brakes and yelled, don't touch the car, don't touch anything in the car, just sit still, you know. And apparently a tree had come down and all these electrical wires were down all over the road and hanging all over the place and sparking. And it was quite, it was scary, you know. I must have been about 6 or 7, and I'm huddled in the back seat, you know, with my sister, and my dad's, you know, kind of shaky, and they're talking about what to do. And suddenly, you know, I'm really scared, and suddenly I have, something comes over me that, like, this sense of joy, this sense of, like, happiness and joy. And so I'm sitting there, if you imagine it, it's dark, thunder, lightning, crashing, we're in a car, sparks are flying, and suddenly I'm filled with joy. And I leaned over to my sister and I said, I feel really happy. I feel really happy. Something along those lines. And she said to me, oh, an angel just kissed you.
Wow. That's cool.
And as I say, well, it's like that, you know. When you and I were talking, I felt this shift of energy, and I realized, you know, hey, wait a second. I'm not going to let them force me to go down, to get down, to lose hope. Because that's what they want.
Yeah, and it seems like the evil that's kind of running amok on our world these days is really persistent and good at what they do. Because when people start feeling like labels instead of people, then
right.
we really got a problem. And
yes.
when I get to feeling down and suddenly you're inspired the way that you were inspired, it brings me back up again because
that's
the connection that we have, you know, with one another. And that to me, you know, is all the hope I need to keep doing what it is I'm doing. You know, some people would say I'm just standing on a soapbox and it's just nothing but words, you know, but words are powerful. If these pictures that we see and the words that we hear and the labels that we're called and all these kind of stuff are powerful enough to bring us down, then why wouldn't it be so that pictures and words that were positive and hopeful bring us back up? You see my point here?
I do, and I totally agree with you. I'm right there with you. We have to know that words are powerful, and yes, certainly visuals. Pictures are very powerful, and this thing about racism, like I said, I don't like to use that term because it is separate. It's a word that separates people, and it's being thrown around a lot, you know, for sure. And that's one thing that I think we have to stop. And even, you know, like you have like Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, you know, that everybody's standing up to separate themselves, you know, to keep that separation going. Everyone matters, you
yeah.
know.
And even if you want to, you know, not, if you, even if you want to be colorblind, somebody always has to come there and try to remind you of differences that they perceive in each other, you know. It's, the mainstream media does it all the time, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's sort of our society has set it up that way, you know. I mean, that's how we were all brought up, and it's nothing new. It's generational, you know. I mean,
yep.
people who moved to this country, oh, you know, the Irish all went into an enclave, you know, a little place down there in Brooklyn or in wherever, and the Italians came in and they moved up a couple blocks up the street next to them, but nobody intermingled, you know. That's part of it, you know. You stick with the people that you know, the traditions that you know, and you look at those others across the street or down the block. Well, they're different, you know. They're so different, but they're really not. But this has been, to me, this is sort of like we're all part of that, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't get to know or don't want to know or fear others, you know, so we don't reach out to them, and we don't see them as just like ourselves. We see them through colored glasses, I guess you could say, or the perspective of the differences, because they eat different food, or they go to a different type of church, or they wear different clothes, you know. And the media does emphasize that a lot, certainly. You know, even the political rhetoric, it's the same.
Yeah. Ironically enough, when we've talked about this before in the past, if you took a child from every single race and background out there and you put them all in a playpen together, they ain't got no problems with one another.
No.
You know? And somehow
that's
or another...
That's it. Yep.
Somehow or another, we got to get back to that innocence. I don't know if it's possible or how to get people back there, but...
We need to get into the playpen together.
Yeah. I
agree with you. Children don't know. This is the thing that you said, I don't know what to do. And I said, I don't know what to do either. But because it's so deeply ingrained in all societies, it's not just here in the United States, you know, on Turtle Island, but it's ingrained in all societies, these types of things. The beliefs start very early, you know, but we're not born that way. You know, we're not born. That's training. That's teaching. That's societal you know, emphasis on certain things, and your parents and your grandparents, what they learned, what they were taught.
Yeah, children know no hatred. They don't have no boundaries set for them that, you know, until their families or the people that surround them, you know, teach them that. And that's why we're in the predicament we're in. You know, all these people out there protesting each other, if they were never towed half of the trash that the mainstream media or even each other towed each other,
yeah,
they wouldn't be out there fighting right now. They'd be out there having a picnic.
Yeah, and they're also coming together for solutions about what we all need to, how we need to help each other.
Yeah. And the crazy thing that really bothers me the most about all of this is this technology that we're using right now to have this conversation is attached to so much information that if used properly, man, we could excel as far as humanity. We could work so closely with nature. Nature is an awesome teacher. If you're willing to pay attention, nature will teach you anything you want to know. And if we could only figure that out, like yesterday on the Mad Science Show, I talked about duckweed. That don't sound don't sound like that big of a deal, but it is a big deal because that's nature's way of cleaning up a pond or a stream that has become out of balance.
That's right.
And in the process of doing that, nature also puts some good things on the table for you while it's using that stuff to do it. There's a perfect biofuel there. There's chicken feed. There's, you know, fertilizer. And in the process of you taking that stuff off of it, nature will keep putting it back as necessary until that pond finally reaches a balance, and then it'll have life in it again. The water's fresh. This stuff is a natural water filtration system that nature puts down when a pond gets imbalanced. And then when you start introducing and helping nature put fish in there, and fish that will eat the duckweed and stuff like that, then you'll start to see that pond clear up, and it'll come back to where it was meant to begin with. It's amazing that even in the process of the cleanup, nature has provided you with so much potential. To me, it's a miracle.
That's true. No, it's amazing. You're right. I've always said that everything we would ever need was put here on this earth.
Yeah.
Everything. There isn't one thing, you know, and just what you're talking about, and that includes, like, you know, medicines, you know, the food, everything we ever needed was right here in our backyard. And we kind of messed it up, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. If folks are looking around out there and their favorite parks are all full of algae and full of duckweed and watermill, then that's nature's way of telling you that something ain't right. And
right.
So if you paid attention, not only could you utilize the deal for food and fertilizer to actually, help the soil around the pond, but you have now something that you can feed chickens and ducks and, whatever. And in worst case scenario, people can actually eat it because it's full of nutrients. Basically, the way I explained it to everybody on the Mad Science Channel is the farmer is over there, he's pumping nitrogen and anhydrous ammonia into his soil to make the soil rich so he can grow some real crops. Mm-hmm. Well, in the process of that, and his pesticides, they mm-hmm. also are, the runoff from his field is running into your pond. And if let's say turtles, for example, if you get too many turtles in there, they will eat up all the duckweed, leaving only the watermill behind. And in that process, that watermill will replicate itself so rapidly that it'll block out the sunlight, and all the plants underneath it will be deprived of sunlight, so photosynthesis can't occur, and the pond will become stagnant. And the only thing that can live in it is frogs and, nasty stuff. But the whole process of the farmer trying to rejuvenate his land had sent this over and started off a chain reaction. The turtles eat up whatever fish are left in there, or herrings will come down and they'll clean it out. Once the fish are gone, once the balance in the pond is gone, then the pond begins to die.
Right.
But you can help nature rejuvenate it. Nature started to rejuvenate it by putting this plant on the pond and allowed it to get so thick so that now that plant is literally filtering the water. If you skim away the top layer of that duckweed and look at the clarity of the water underneath there, it's amazing.
Hmm. Yeah.
So
that's very, you know, it reminds me of also mycelia, the way mycelia works and the whole system of that as a healer plant, nurturing food, healer plant for all this, the whole ecosystem.
Yeah. But nature sits here and tells you when something's wrong. It shows you right there, you know. You see these, you know, like, for example, golf courses, they want this beautiful, pristine land, so they'll spray, you know, pesticides or herbicides on it, you know, and they mow it all down, and eventually the pond, you know, doesn't have any wildlife in it, and, you know, they got to continue the same repetitive process of trying to keep the water clear, so they'll go out and hire somebody to come in there with herbicides and spray down the pond and that kind of stuff there, when in reality, if they would have used what nature had already showed them, they would have brought that pond back to life, and it would have been beautiful naturally as opposed to, you know, chemically, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, I do, and people, it's not just the golf course, it's people's lawns. You
yeah.
know, the impression that you have to have that pure lawn that looks like a fake rug, you know.
Yeah.
Dump all the pesticides and the sprays on it, and I mean, it's really, you're killing everything that's necessary, you know, and even foods, you know, like dandelions and chickweed and various other things that are really medicines. But it's like, it's kind of like that's part of the madness, I think, going on too, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe all those chemicals are making people wacky.
You might be right on that. But see,
I think so.
you hit on a key point. It's not just the golf courses. It's average Joe as well, trying to make their lawn look good, and they're always complaining about how, you know, the neighbor's lawn looks, or look how scummy your pond is. You know, well, you know what? That runoff from your property came down and killed off my pond. You know, but nonetheless, nature done saw the problem. Nature started resolving the problem and waited for you to notice so that you come in there, and if you assist nature, like I've been doing with these ponds that are on my property that had since died off because they got out of balance, you're starting to see them come back. They're coming back alive. It took a little bit of manual labor, skimming a little bit off every day to try to get the sunlight back down in there so that other plants would thrive and begin to compete with the watermelon, the duckweed. And then I went out and picked the appropriate fish that will go and eat the remaining duckweed and stuff. It's like perch and bluegill and carp and goldfish. They will eat that stuff, and turtles will eat that stuff. And so as long as you start balancing that back out, you start seeing the pond literally clear itself up. And once that happens, you'll get, you know, nature kind of just move in, you know, the animals are coming there because the water's worthy of drinking again, and so on. And, you know, it's just a tiny example of what could be accomplished if we actually paid attention to our environment and
right.
spent less time out there trying to break each other down.
Right. Yeah. Or trying to control nature.
Yeah.
Trying to control the environment, because we've been told by the various, you know, corporate, you know, products that this will make everything, you know, this will make your lawn beautiful, or this will get rid of the you know, the worms, or this will get rid of the moles, or this will, whatever it is, you know. But everything, I feel, has a purpose.
It
you
does.
Know? Some of them are definitely, you know, can get out of balance too, again, but why is it out of balance? Because something is messing with the system.
Yeah, if you got hordes and hordes of mosquitoes around your property, it's because something on your property has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you got little tiny fish in your pond, they'll eat the mosquito larvae, and so the mosquitoes can't overpopulate. But if you got like old tires laying around with stagnated water, that's a breeding ground, especially because the tires are black and they will hold in heat. It's a perfect incubator. But if you still want to use the tires, you can go in there and you can drain out the, drill holes in them and use them, for landscaping, but allow the water to be able to get out of there so that it ain't a breeding ground. But everything out there, including the earthworms and all of them, they're all important to that ecosystem. And once they start going awry, you start seeing things like, these... there's the airborne diseases or whatever, mosquito traveling diseases, let's just say that you get hordes and hordes of mosquitoes, and then they start drinking blood of people who are sick and then going around and drinking yours and transmitting that disease from...
Whoopee.
Yeah. So, folks, if we spent as much time working... to try to make this to assist, we can't tell nature what to do. Nature's going to do what nature does. But if we try to spend as much time as we do tearing each other down, assisting nature in cleaning up, we ain't going to have nothing to complain about, because this world will look beautiful. We don't have to get rid of all our cool technology. We can just make it more efficient and make it to where it's not throwing things out of whack. It's what we're doing, literally. It's on a global scale. It's not just in any specific area. If you, Stephen posted some pictures earlier in there in the chat room of big lakes that are just completely covered with duckweed and watermill. So that tells you that all those, in those fancy houses where all these people lived, and they're trying to treat their little piece of property with chemistry that is basically running off into this same beautiful lake that they used to have, and now they're wondering why it is that the lake looks so bad. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so you're saying that if you have duckweed on your pond, you need to lift off some of that duckweed. You just don't leave it there.
Yeah, just take off just enough to allow it to break up to allow sunlight to get back in there. Otherwise,
right.
The duckweed will become so incredibly thick that the water itself will clear up. But you won't have any life in there, because the sunlight will block out the plants that are underneath the water, and the oxygen level will drop down to where fish can't survive in there.
Right.
Now, at some point, you'll have turtles that will move in there, and they will begin to eat that duckweed, but they'll leave the water mill behind, and since the water mill runs so rapid, that it will literally block out the sunlight and finally finish off the pond and become stagnated. But all you have to do in order to remedy this problem is begin to skim off a half of it at a time. It'll be back. But just keep working at it so that you can get sunlight into that pond so that the plants underneath can start to use the photosynthesis to, produce oxygen and begin to thrive. And then start introducing natural fish back into the pond again, and it'll come back to life. But
now, what's watermill look like?
It looks like these little tiny seeds, little green seeds that float on the water.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, and what's duckweed look like?
Duckweed looks like a four leaf clover, but it has roots on the bottom of it. If you lift up a piece of duckweed, it'll look like a floating plant with roots underneath there, and the duckweed literally filters water. If it's allowed to run amok, it will suck all the nutrients out of the pond. That's why duckweed has so much nitrogen protein and all the different minerals that would have naturally been in that pond are now in that duckweed, which makes it really highly nutrient-filled for your chickens and your ducks and, you know, even wildlife or even yourself in worst-case scenario. But if people eat it, they got to boil it first because of the way that it's got spiny roots on there, and it's not something you want to eat. And you need to definitely make sure that it's not in a toxic environment, because it will also pull toxins out of the water.
Right.
So it's nature's way to filter water that has been contaminated, you know, by chemistry or whatever.
Right.
So it's amazing stuff.
Yeah, well, we have a pond here, and we have a lake here, and I notice I have to go check it. You see, well, there was some sewage from a septic system going in there when we bought this house. I had this feeling, and because we had the water tested, and there was some E. coli in there, and we had the water tested, and we said, well, where the heck could that be coming from? And I felt it was coming from the old septic system, and sure enough, we diverted some of those pipes. They had the pipes runoff from the septic system going directly downhill toward the pond, which was really dumb, but I guess that's the solutions of long ago.
Yeah.
And so we diverted that, but there is duckweed there. I think it's duckweed. I have to look, because I didn't know the difference between duckweed and watermill.
In your septic pond, if there's only watermill in there, then you need to put duckweed in it.
Okay.
Because the duckweed is the filtration portion. The watermill just makes the water become stagnant. And so if you put, like, let's say you go over there and all you see is that little seed-like watermill.
Yeah.
But you don't see none of the little flowering duckweed plants or whatever. Then go get you a 5-gallon bucket and fill it up with duckweed from another pond and put that in there, because chances are what happened was a turtle moved into the septic pond, which they do, if frogs will live in there too, and the turtle ate up all the duckweed, and when all the duckweed was gone, moved on to another pond.
And we've got tons of turtles.
Yeah.
Tons of turtles. We got snapper turtles, those other little turtles, you know.
Yeah.
The smooth little ones and with their smooth backs.
The water turtles, regular water turtles.
We got those. We do have fish, you know, but I know, and we have ducks on the, and small, ducks and geese that come, but, and herons and all that, but I don't think the pond's healthy.
No, if you put that duckweed into a septic pond, that'll help that pond out.
Okay.
Because that stuff is,
to know.
Its job is to filter. And then, you know, if there are still turtles living in there, they'll still eat it, you know. It'll actually benefit your pond. If that pond there stays in balance, then the one that, if it in the runoff gets down to there, you won't have E. coli in your other pond.
Yeah, well, we shouldn't now, unless it's other neighbors. There's, you know, the way that there's ponds all over the place here. We have a lot of water places here on this mountainside, a lot of ponds. And across the road, there's a pond, and people's house backs up to it. And that water filters into our pond under the road. And then it goes on into a wetland. So I have no control over what those people are doing with their septic system. You know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I'm going to check on that and see, you know, how it's looking as far as the two different plants, which I didn't realize. I mean, I've heard about duckweed. I thought it was duckweed. Didn't know about watermill, but it's possible that it's watermill.
Yeah, chances are if it's from the septic tank or septic pond, the way the septic tanks are set up these days, they have two separate deals. One is for like solid waste, and then one's for the water. And then by the time it gets out into that pond, it's supposed to be by EPA standards classified as, you know, fresh water again.
Well, I don't trust the EPA.
Yeah, I don't either. But that's the way they're supposedly set up.
Right.
But,
I mean, they can say, well, there's a certain percentage allowed, and then who discerns what that certain percentage is of any pollutant? You know, who's got that job?
But nonetheless, if you've got duckweed on your septic tank or your septic pond, then that means that pond is doing its job.
Okay.
Because that duckweed is a filtration system. It's nature's way to filtrate it. And if you've got just watermeal on there, then that's a bad deal. You need to put some duckweed on there to help it to filter that out, because the duckweed will compete with the watermeal and it'll balance itself out.
I'll check on that.
Then for your regular ponds, when you start to try to rejuvenate those, go out and find like perch and like sun perch and bluegill and even goldfish for that matter, because they will eat that stuff. And between the fish and the duckweed and the turtles and the wildlife, it'll start to balance itself out, and you don't have to put chemicals on there in order to get it done. Just every so often skim off a little bit of it to ensure that there's always some way that sunlight can get into that pond.
Well, you, I don't know about you, but around here, we can't just introduce fish into our ponds.
Well, I didn't ask.
There's certain requirements by the EPA.
Yeah, I didn't ask for permission. I just did it.
Right.
Oops, look, that fish slipped in there. I don't know how that got there. You know? Because I'm listening to nature. I don't care what the government has to say. Nature's the one that taught me what I need to know.
Right.
And my ponds are starting to look healthy. I've got some ponds out there that there's an invasive plant that goes in the pond that you got to kind of every once in a while rake out. It's that one that you see in fish tanks all the time.
We have that. It looks like fern.
Yeah. And so that is it's a good thing, and it can be a bad thing. It's a bad thing if you allow it to get out of control, because it'll cover your whole pond. But it's a good thing because fish eat that, and it also puts a lot of oxygen into the water. And so if you take some of that and you throw it in there with the pond that has the duckweed and the watermill, those three plants will now be competing with each other for nutrients, and so it'll start balancing itself out, putting oxygen into the pond and making food for the fish and stuff like that. So
I don't know how big your pond is, but we have like about a 4-acre pond.
Yeah, well, mine's probably maybe a quarter acre, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of difficult to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
To get all that out.
Well, the good thing is I took out what I did was I made a pond skimmer. I took a couple pieces of PVC plumbing and I filled them up with expanding foam and sealed off the ends of them and made like a pontoon kind of boat. And then at the back I had a piece of material that would hang down and drag the water. And so because the watermill and the duckweed float on the top of the water, all you got to do is carefully drag that in, and it will pull this stuff in by the tons.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, and the other one was that I went out and I bought 20 of those pool noodles and 100 foot of rope, and I made a pond skimmer that you can string the rope through the pool noodles, and then have somebody on one side and somebody on the other side, and just carefully drag it, and you'll bring it all over to the shore where you can get to it and skim it off.
Uh-huh.
Anything that...
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, anything that floats on the top of that water that will allow it to, drag along, because especially with the duckweed, it has those roots, so they'll grab onto each other on the way by.
Right. Well, that's good advice.
That's
really.
if people only understood that and the potential of what this stuff could actually be used for, it could be a benefit, because, like I said, you can make biofuel out of it, you can make fertilizer out of it, you can make fish food out of it. You take that stuff and you dry it out in a dehydrator out in the sun. And you can actually make dried fish food flakes that you can use. So it's free fish food. It's free chicken feed, duck feed, and so many different uses for it. And at the same time, it's a water filtration system that nature uses to clean up a pond that's out of balance. And once you realize you got this on your pond and you know your pond's out of balance, and you start working towards putting it back into balance, eventually the duckweed will go away. I mean, in the wintertime, have you ever noticed how, like, during the summertime your pond is green, and in the wintertime it's all clear?
Yes.
Yeah, this stuff actually sinks to the bottom when the weather gets cold and sets on the bottom until the weather warms up again, and then it'll come back up. And as long as you keep water flow, the water mill only likes stagnant ponds. It only likes ponds where the water isn't moving around.
Uh-huh.
And if you got if you got turtles in there, go out and get you some of that floating fish food and start feeding those turtles. And there's a reason for that. Not only are they helping you eat that water mill, because as they're going to get the fish food, they're also taking water mill with it, but they're keeping that water stirred up by swimming around, which is keeping sunlight coming in. So you're helping the turtles, and you'll make friends with them. I got a turtle friend that I call Goliath because he's a huge snapping turtle. And he comes up there and he looks at me. He sees that cup in my hand. He knows I got food. And so I've been doing this for so long that he literally swims up to the shore and waits for me to throw him out some food.
That's funny.
It's neat.
That is cool.
But nature's provided all the doggone solutions. Now if we can get people to pay attention, you know. Yesterday I put a challenge out there. Bring all the doggone the environmentalists of the world, bring them out here to have a conversation with me. Sit down with them a couple hours and just let me talk with them. You know, because if they really want to save this planet, nature's told you how to do it. And, you know, few people that paid attention, they got that wisdom in their head, and I feel like I got some things I could share with these environmentalists that would probably surprise them. You know? And the companies out there that, if I told a golf company that they could probably make or save money by allowing that pond to do what nature has already started, and instead of them going out buying chemical fertilizers, they could utilize that duckweed to fertilize their grass and make that grass greener than it ever was before, you think they would listen?
I don't know. At this stage, I'm not sure.
That
I wish that it would be beautiful if they would. Maybe some would. You know, I know they are making. There are people that are owning certain companies that have connected and have awakened and have realized that they're really polluting and messing up things. Like there's this company that puts they make wall-to-wall carpeting. You know what a mess that is.
Yeah.
You know, chemically-wise and everything, you know. Well, this company, I don't know where it was. This was a couple of years ago I was reading about it, and they decided to change their methods to be more in harmony, I guess, with nature and not pollutants. And they figured it out. It took them years. I don't know what the system was. I don't remember. Like I said, it's been a while. But I thought, this is really neat. These people made an effort to bring in some others who have a different perspective on things, on how to create their wall-to-wall carpeting without having to, you know, put the poisons in it that, and the, what is it, all these chemicals that you bring into your house that are not healthy for us. And they figured out, they had these people they hired, they figured it out, and they changed their whole method. And now they're going around to other companies to help them also change their ways. I mean, this was quite a few years ago, but that is going on, you know. More and more of that is needed, though.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that water mill that I talked about, even as destructive as that is, I scraped up tons of this stuff off this pond when this pond was very first, when I started first repairing the dam and trying to make it come back to life. And it was almost like a losing battle, because this stuff will replicate so rapidly. Within a day or two, it will double in size. And that's how fast both of these plants will grow. But when that stuff, when I scooped it off and I threw it up on the shoreline and just allowed it to, compose, or whatever, decompose, the smell that came off of that was terrible. I mean, it smelled like raw fertilizer that, you know, whenever people use, like, manure for fertilizing their dill. That stuff is so nutrient rich and full of nitrogen that if you use that water mill for fertilizer in your garden, I swear you'll have tomatoes the size of watermelons.
Well,
I'll
have to, I'm gonna take that into consideration.
Yeah, try it. Just get you a potted plant and put one plant of tomatoes in one and then the other and use whatever fertilizer you are not on the one and just nothing but water mill. Just take, scrape off a bucket of that water mill and set it right down there and just let it decompose right down there next to those plants. And that because of the nitrogen and all the mineral richness of that stuff, I guarantee you, you're going to come back and say, I had some huge tomatoes. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if you got one the size of a watermelon.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, all that stuff. And oh, there was something else I was just came on my mind, but my grandson just walked in crying for his mama. So looking for her, and she's out with the goats. So
this stuff is good for feeding wildlife and animals as well. So, you know, mix a little bit of that in with your chicken feed, and you'll see. You'll probably have some real good old-sized chickens running around out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know what I was going to say. My daughter, they went to the ocean 2 years ago, I guess, for, you know, a holiday, and they took a big trailer with them, you know, one of those things you pile stuff onto.
Yeah.
And they picked up, she was going on the shore raking up all the seaweed.
Yeah, that's people, good too.
People were looking at her like, "What is this lady doing?" And they got tons of seaweed. We've been using it in our garden. We still have some left over, and I'll tell you, boy, what an amazing difference!
Well, that's another thing that just drives me insane because, you know, people say that you know, there's certain places that you just can't grow anything anymore because the ground is so nutrient depleted. If you was to skim off all these ponds that are out of balance and take that doggone stuff out there and put it on that land would be so nutrient rich. You till that land up and mix it in with that duckweed and watermill, that land will revive itself.
And I betcha.
It's a fact. And
well, if you like going to the ocean, take some plastic garbage bags and pick up the seaweed and cart it home and put it in your garden. Right?
Yeah. And the best thing about the whole deal is it was free.
It was free.
You didn't have to go out there and buy fancy fertilizer, and I'm sure some of these fertilizer companies know it, but they're not saying it, that that's what they used in their ingredients. I bet anything.
Yeah, you're probably right. they got a smart deal going, don't they?
Yeah.
And now well, people are too either unconscious or, I don't want to, you know, maybe they're lazy or they're discouraged or whatever it is, or it's just easy, go to the store and just buy the bag, you know.
Yep, go on.
But it's not, oftentimes it's not organic, you know. This stuff you have to, again, what are you using, what are you buying?
Yep, in the midst of that chemistry there might be something that would actually throw your ponds or whatever nearby off balance. If you go out there on YouTube and you Google up or YouTube duckweed, you'll be surprised to know that people who are doing aquaponics and hydroponics systems,
you're right. Yep.
They were actually buying this stuff online for like a little bag of, you know, Ziploc bag full of duckweed. They'd spend about $5 to have somebody ship it to them.
Right. It's right down the street in your neighbor's
pond. Yeah.
And, oh, that's so true. You know, I realize that. I mean, I have looked at the sites with aquaponics and stuff like that. It's a pretty neat system, you know, what people are doing to growing their fish and, you know, tilapia and other things. And
the one guy has two tanks of it sitting in between his aquaponic system, and he uses the duckweed to literally filter the water. So it's, you know, filtering the water so that when the water comes back around, you don't even have to keep buying like activated carbon or anything like that. He's just using the duckweed to do the job. That's what nature does. And the fish eat it. he takes a little bit off of the deal, and the next day it'll grow back, you know. So he's just beat. He's got free fish food for his fish, plus the water's filtering itself, and the plants are growing and thriving, and everything's working out just fine. It's amazing.
Well, there you go. Again, it's what Mother Nature has given us, everything, if you just use your common sense and get out there and start paying attention and listening and, you know, and watching things and, you know, just that's the whole point. And but, you know, the whole corporation and the industrial mess that has gotten us into the state we are is really,
yep.
It's so rampant. It's so huge, you know.
And all the hype about food shortages on this planet is to me the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, I've heard a lot of ridiculous stuff, don't get me wrong. But sitting here explaining to you just one little tiny fraction of what nature has provided, there's enough nutrients in that duckweed to feed not just all the animals, but all the people. And this stuff will duplicate itself every 24 hours. You got just as much as you had when you skimmed off the first time. So it's an ongoing chore if you decide you want to try to do this manually, unless you build a system like the one I did. Yeah, you can actually see that system in my video that I posted here recently. And let me see if I can get the name of that. I posted it up there in the chat room. It says free on it. That's the name of the video, free.
Okay.
So if you go look at my video free, you'll see that I stretched a pulley system across the deal and I got that floating pond skimmer, and you can see how much I'm able to pull in one shot. Mm. And then after a couple runs of this, you can see that it starts to open sunlight over there for the fish down there and the plant life underneath there. And I just go out there every day and just skim off a little bit of it, and I'm letting nature do the rest of the work for me. And the fish that I put in there, I put goldfish in there and some minnows. And so the minnows are eating up the... that's another thing. Mosquitoes won't lay their eggs on a pond full of duckweed.
Uh-huh.
And why that is, I have no idea. Maybe because they can't see their larvae to feed them or whatever. For whatever purpose, the mosquitoes won't infest a pond that's full of duckweed. But the minnows will eat up the little water mill particles, and the goldfish will eat up the duckweed portions of it. So after a while, that pond will start to clear itself. And in the process, you get a lot of fertilizer and chicken feeding for free.
Right.
And if you want to turn it into biofuel, same thing. So I put that video out there just as a small example of, you know, people say there ain't no such thing as free energy. They simply are not paying attention. I mean, the sun is producing energy, the wind is producing energy, the waterways are producing energy, the water itself is pure energy. The stuff that nature uses to clean up every mess that we made is yet even more energy. And if you learned how to use this stuff properly, you could run it in internal combustion engines and never even put out no cruddy exhaust.
Uh-huh.
That's the whole thing. I mean, people have been running diesel engines off of French fry oil.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, around here it's difficult now. In most places now, it's difficult to get that oil, that free oil. People are doing it so much.
Yeah, well, just go down to your neighbor's scummy pond and get some duckweed and turn it into your own oil. Because where did the vegetable oil come from? Keyword vegetable.
Ah, that's true.
Look, folks, we live
in... See, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, does it?
we live in a carbon-based world. Everything in this world, including yourself, is carbon. And nature recycles everything, including
you. But wait, that's the big problem. We got to get rid of the carbon. Our carbon footprint is causing all this mess.
Well, you're going to have to get rid of your foot, because it's full of carbon.
I'm just saying, that's the insanity that's going around.
Yep.
You know, is that false claim there. It's like, yep, we got to get rid of our carbon footprint.
And we got to get rid of ourselves then, because we're going to start with the footprint and work our way up to the foot. And next thing you know, you're gone because you're carbon too. So, you know, what about the other people? Do we must have aliens on this planet because they don't think they're carbon based.
Well, we do have aliens on this planet. What are you going to do about it?
Patty Walking Turtle said, I saw it, and the swimming cat was a great shot also. My buddy Neil made a raft out of a pallet and a bunch of old bottles, a bunch of old trash, and so he was taking the cat for a ride. Well, the cat decided he didn't want to go for a ride, decided he was going to swim back to shore and jumps off. I have never seen a cat that wasn't afraid, that was, you know, willing, literally
that's
willing
wild.
To jump in the water and swim to the shore. It
wow.
was probably a case of, I'm on this trashy raft, do I trust the raft or do I trust my swimming abilities? And so
yeah, that's right. It's
yeah.
a matter of, yeah, survival, right?
That cat swam to shore. It's on video. You can see it. It's pretty funny.
That's pretty wild.
Folks, we got solutions available to us. All you got to do is pay attention and start treating each other decent. There ain't no reason to be out there protesting to save the planet when you could be out there being part of the process. You know, you could actually be part of saving the planet. And me skimming
well,
off that
there's
pole.
Where the unity needs to come in, is people coming up, sitting together, you know, with a person like yourself or others, and let's get together to make some biofuel. Let's get
yep.
together to... you know, to utilize what is there, has been there, to make a better planet, to make a better life for ourselves, even to give ourselves some food, you know. Wow, what a focus and an amazing thing that would be, right?
Yeah, I'm asking people out there, find all the groups out there who are environmentalists that, you know, spend a lot of time protesting, and send them my direction. Tell them I want to have just a conversation with them. Sit down for a couple hours and show them a few videos or tell them about a few things that I've learned, the research that I got to share with them, and they might have a different outlook on ways to resolve the, you know, the issues of the world. You know, you're out there protesting what the government ain't doing you no good. You see that if you're still protesting 20 years after you started, you haven't got nothing done. You know what I mean?
You think?
But if I sit there for 20 years and clear off that pond and keep introducing what belonged there to begin with into that pond, and that pond comes back to life, I got my productive time out of it, and now this thing works, and I learned a few things in the process.
And you got some friends along with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Goliath, he's an awesome turtle. If you just see the look on his face, I'll have to post that video. He's a character. He just
that sounds like a children's book, Goliath the Awesome Turtle.
Yeah. He'll swim up and he'll just sit there and look at me. He can see I'm holding that cup and he knows what's in it. And if you can look into the eyes of a turtle like that and want to do something mean, you just got to be a rotten individual, because it just warms my heart every time that turtle swims up there and takes a peek at me. And he's got friends too, because I've noticed that I'm drawing a crowd now.
Yeah.
You know, and Goliath shows up, and then everybody knows Goliath's fixing to get fed, so they're coming over. They want theirs too.
Yeah, the word gets around.
Yeah.
And I've had some experiences with turtles of saving, when I've saved turtles from the road. You know, I mean, right away, they get startled and they go into their shell and so on. But I've put them down on the ground and talked to them and whatever. And I've had some turtles turn around and look right up at me.
Yep.
Turn right around and look right up at me and then go on their way. Like, you know, like they're saying, well, thank you.
Did I tell you that? Did I tell you the frog story?
No.
Well, while I was down there skimming off the pond one day, I just got through feeding Goliath and the rest of the turtles out there. I kept hearing this sound, and I swear it sounded like, help, help, you know, and I'm like, what the heck is that? And so I walk around there, and I move the bush away just a little bit, and I see this frog laying on his back. And it was croaking, but to me it sounded like, help, help, you know. And so when I opened up that deal, the frog flips over and jumps and hops towards the pond. Well, just at that moment, a big, huge black snake went booking off around the outside of that bush and down into the weeds. And so I saved that frog from getting eaten by that black snake. Well, about a day or so later, I'm down there, I'm skimming off the pond again, and this one particular frog comes over there and sits right down in front of me, facing out towards the pond. And I'm sitting there, I'm moving that pond skimmer over to the top of this frog's head and slopping that duckweed over there, and the frog ain't budging. He's sitting there like, you know, hey, I know this guy's going to keep me
He's
safe.
He's my friend. Him. He's my protector.
He didn't go nowhere, and other frogs were sitting around. They weren't scared. They weren't jumping away or anything like that. And I was talking to the frog. How you doing there, frog? You having a good day?
I've had so many experiences with communication with animals like that. You know, and it's interesting because Patty and I were talking, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning last night, we were both up talking about, she mentioned something about the animals are telling us, you know. They're speaking to us, trying to get our attention and saying, you know, really, and it's so true. I've seen so many stories about the animals, the behavior of the animals trying to really wake people up. You know, I believe that, really.
Yeah, I believe it too. And I believe nature is talking to us. Nature is telling us there's a problem. And if we listen and we address it, you know, I've told you stories and you told me stories about being able to walk out there and the animals are not running like they used to.
That's right.
They get to know you and your presence, and that you're not going, every time you've been around, you've never rushed at them, you never tried to do anything harmful to them, you know, wave at them, say hi, or whatever. Most people would look at me, if they watched me walk around this property, like I was nuts. Oh, look, he's
well,
over
there. That's okay, we're nuts too.
He's over there talking to frogs again, look at that.
Yeah, Freddy the Frog. And
yeah, Freddy the Frog.
Goliath the Turtle. Shaziz's world.
Yep. My world out here is pretty nice, so I'm thinking I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep posting videos about working with nature, and hopefully other people will adopt that. And when they see the final product, after I finally get this place back to where it should be, and they see what I've accomplished with my eccentric ways and craziness, whatever, maybe they'll see that there is a potential that they could do the same thing on their land and actually enjoy it as well. You know, it just feels so good out here.
Well, it really, to me, nature is the healer. You know, left to its own devices, everything would be fine. It also heals us, you know, I mean, and it responds to us. All of nature does respond to us, and it, very well aware of us. Like, you know, and we talk about, well, the animals, certainly, but then even plants, you know, plants and trees. And, you know, I've had extraordinary experiences with plants and trees. You know, where you say people, like you talk about, people would say you're nuts, but, you know, I know what my experiences are. You know, I'm not making it up. They're pretty profound and extraordinary, I guess you could say, on a level of miracles, you know.
Yep.
But there is that does exist. And what's sad to me is that people are so removed from nature that they don't experience these kinds of things. And you receive a healing when you're out in nature. I always do. I could be so down. I could be really in a troubled place. And if I take myself out to nature and I just sit, I could be out there bawling my eyes out. And eventually, something starts to change, you know?
Yep.
And I'll start to calm down, and I'll start to look around, and then I see some extraordinary things. Or I might see something responding to me, you know, like a nearby bush. Everything is still. There's not a breeze, nothing. And this little bush nearby could be just waving at me, you know, like,
yeah.
Like the leaves could be shimmering at me, you know?
Well, I know this might sound crazy, but while I was down there skimming the duckweed, after I had developed this kind of relationship with Goliath, I almost fell off the chair, and I caught myself by the tree. But you know that turtle turned around and started heading back towards me when he thought I was in trouble? Now, some people might just say that's just my perception of what happened, but I felt, honestly, like that turtle was really concerned for my well-being. Now, I know it sounds crazy.
I get you. I'm right there with you. I don't think that's weird or strange at all. Because I've had those kinds of experiences. When people tell me these kinds of stories, like you're sharing, I don't raise my eyebrows or roll my eyes and say, yeah, right, I know, because I've had some of them myself.
Well, animals, including dogs, cats, they know. You know, they know, and they care. I honestly believe that. And, you know, that turtle's inspired me so much that I'm actually preparing to write a book. I'm going to write an actual book called Goliath about that turtle. But it's
there
gonna
you
have,
go.
It's going to have a bigger meaning to it, because something you said earlier that made me want to do this is that the healing that is involved. You know, I've gone through a lot of struggles because I've seen a lot of things in my life that I wish I had never seen. And, you know, some of the experiences in my life makes it hard for me to be able to cope with the world out there. And this turtle has been like, you know the story of David and Goliath, right?
Yes, I do.
Well, the word Goliath, if you think about Goliath, because he was a giant. All right, and the problem
he was a bad giant.
Yeah, and the problems that we have on an individual basis sometimes are a Goliath. They are a huge.
That's true.
But the Goliath that helped me through this whole deal, helped me conquer my Goliath, was a turtle. He brought a calmness to my heart and developed a friendship with me. This is some being that is, normally a wild creature. As soon as they see you, they don't want no part of you. They take off running. And this turtle doesn't go away from me. It comes towards me.
Yeah.
That's cool. And that is, that has produced a healing inside of me that has made it where I was able to conquer my Goliath. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And because the turtle is huge, I had to name him Goliath. I mean, if you just see this turtle, he's like,
Well, I've picked up some of those. I've picked up some of those turtles that got stuck in our garden, and I'll tell you, they are huge.
Yeah.
Yes, I know it. I know what you're talking about.
And now that I'm feeding him fish food, he's getting bigger.
I had one in there. They come up here from the pond to lay their eggs, and I'm sitting out at the picnic table on the bench, and I'm facing outward. And that turtle was roaming around the yard. She's trying to find a place. Tried over here, tried over there. She walked toward me. I'm sitting there. And she walked toward me. And she walked closer and closer and closer. Now, I'm getting kind of a little nervous because these are giant. They're extraordinary creatures. I mean, wow. Talk about, you know, the primal connection.
Yeah.
And she just came right near me. And she touched my foot with her nose, and she just kept walking. I actually had my legs crossed, my leg crossed, and I had to lift up my foot so she could go under me. That's how big she was. She just touched my foot, and then she just went on, found her place where she was going to lay her eggs. But that's, you know, pretty extraordinary, you know. And I had this incident with a skunk years ago. You'll get a kick out of this. It was like I was living in a little village, well, Woodstock, the famous Woodstock. And in the neighborhood, across the street, my friends had some cats, and they put their dishes of food outside, and there was a skunk that used to come around in the middle of the afternoon and eat from that dish, the cat food, and then her cats and this little skunk would play. They'd kind of play like kittens, you know? And so that little skunk used to come past my chair. I'd be sitting there, and it'd walk past my chair, waddle down the driveway, and go get cat food, and I started calling that skunk Skunky Poo. So I'd sit there, and he'd just wander. I used to throw him peanuts. He'd scarf up the peanuts, and so then I heard the neighbor in the other direction got nervous, saying, well, skunks shouldn't be out during the day. They're nocturnal, and that means that skunk is a rabid. I'm going to call, you know, the, well, what do they call, like a, people who pick up animals,
animal
control. was going to call animal control, so I got worried for Skunky Poo. So I was talking to Skunky Poo in my mind, not out loud. I was saying, Skunky Poo, the police are looking for you. You better hide. Don't come around because, you know, people are getting afraid and they think there's something wrong with you, so you better hide. The police are after you. So this was an ongoing conversation, and I guess it was maybe 2 weeks Skunky Poo was gone. Didn't see Skunky Poo at all. And I was now worried. Okay, did he get my message? Did he hide? Is he hiding? Or did the police pick him up? And one night, I got the feeling to go outside. It was about midnight, and I was sitting in the chair, just sitting there enjoying the night. And up the bottom of the driveway, waddle, 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 comes Skunky Poo. He comes up the driveway about, you know, several feet away from me. I yelled. I couldn't help myself. I said, Skunky Poo, I've been thinking of you. Where have you been? And as he comes right up to me, puts his nose on my foot. And I feel this, literally, I feel this like electric energy. I feel this, it was like unbelievable, like a little touch of electricity. He walks away. And I even touched my foot because I said, what happened? You know, it was like this. And my hand felt like this buzzing, like this energy. And it was the most amazing thing. I said, well, Skunky Poo touched me and sent me this love zap.
That's so cool.
That was like extraordinary, you know?
That's so cool. I wish the rest of the world would slow down long enough to experience that, you know? I want to make this place where I'm at and invite people to come out and see it, you know, just to experience it so that they can see, you know, what's possible. You know, these folks out there that are out there doing all the protesting and the rioting and stuff, they have no concept of what life is all about. They're missing out on so much. They're probably even missing out on their own families because some of these are adults that are out there protesting, you know, and where's their family while this is all going on, you know? They may think that they're doing some good in the world, but like I said earlier, if you've been protesting for 20 years about saving the planet, and you're still protesting, then nothing got done. You see what I mean?
Well, I agree with you, and I also don't think the protesting is going to make much of a change.
It's not.
I think the change is taking part in what you and I are talking about.
Yeah. It might do something to get people to notice for a minute, but people's attention span, it's not much more than a minute, you know? And so with that said, the best way you're going to get somebody's attention is like that doggone video I put out there that says free on it. People like free stuff, and they come and look, oh, look what he said, free duckweed. You can turn that into biofuel, you can turn it into fertilizer, you can turn it into fish food. Now, if you want to save the planet, you can assist nature and possibly even make a few bucks in the process by supplying people fertilizer and fish food, you know?
So, well, I think what those protests do is show people there is no unity.
Yeah, because it usually ends up chaotic. Somebody ends up hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and the best way to, you know, get out there and save the trees is not to be standing there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees. It's get out there and plant some trees.
Exactly. Get your neighbors. Call on your neighbors, right? Say, I'm going to plant some trees. Would you like to join me? That's what it's about.
Yeah, make a family day out of it, you know? And then the cool thing about that is when you plant that tree, like for me and my wife's anniversary, I planted a couple evergreens because evergreens they're green all year round, so you get to see the beauty all year round. But I planted these when they were little tiny sprouts. I replanted them. I brought them from out in the field. I had little tiny sprouts of them, and I planted two side by side with each other. And to this very day, they're still out there, and they're getting bigger and bigger. And you know, and it's just to watch something that you put in the ground grow, and it's just It's amazing. It's cool. I don't know any other way to explain it other than that. But my wife and I, we can see those trees every day, and we remember our promise to each other, you know? So there's a whole lot of benefits, you know. Sometimes we talked about like Johnny Appleseed planting apples, and maybe he'll never get to enjoy the fruits of his labor, but someday down the line, somebody will. A whole lot of somebodies, probably. Granny's apple pie was probably made by some seeds that somebody planted.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in the old way of the native people, the, let's say the, you know, how you, for generations, the stories are told, you know, especially in the wintertime when you can't get out too much, and so people hold up in their, you know, in their wiki-ups and their teepees and so on throughout the winter, and that was the time for storytelling. And that was the time when, you know, all the stories of the people, the generations before that left the stories that were teachings and significant for everyone to keep passing along, you know. And the story of the connectedness to the early people, the early humans on the mother, was that we all were gifted the ability to communicate with all of nature. Really communicate. We spoke the same language as the animals, which they do speak a language. You know, when we hear, I had this experience, you know, when you hear the frogs and the peepers, for instance, by the pond, that's all you hear, you know, the croaking, croaking, the beeping, and all that.
Kind of like me hearing that frog holler for help.
But you heard the true voice.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So you heard, you in relationship, you had the ability that to hear, not that rawr, you heard help, help, help. And that's the way it used to be before people went into the dream, the sleep time, it's called, where people disconnected from that. And we lost our ability to communicate and have conversation. And because the animals are teachers to us, as is all of nature, they are our teachers. They had a lot to teach us, to guide us with and teach us and help us. And we, you know, have been separated from that. And that's a huge, you know, a loss for us, and also for the animals.
Well, I feel like I'm getting it back. I feel like I'm sitting here telling people I feel like these animals know exactly what I'm saying, and
they do.
Hearing frogs holler for help, and when I rescue them, they come sit next to me. There's got to be a time when it's no longer a coincidence.
Well, that's the way it used to be before the majority of people went to sleep, you know, and that was deliberate, I feel, you know, Shaziz, in my way of realizing things and understanding things, that there's a deliberate and agenda to remove people from this healing Mother Earth and the creatures and nature, because that was our original way. They were our teachers, they were our guides, they told us, showed us how to get the medicines, where to go, how, all these things that were so essential. And we've lost that, and I feel that's deliberate, because it's you know, people's spirits are hurting.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel that's the key piece here, and to me it's spiritual connectedness, it's this connectedness to spirit, the life, the living spirit of everything, is what I believe. Everything has a living spirit. Like that little frog has a spirit in it. It has a consciousness that recognized that you were like a heart-centered being. They're very aware of you. They're not just, this isn't just new. You've been there on that land in a caring, loving way. And they've been passing this message around about you. And that frog knew you. And there it said, I need help. And I'm going to ask this beautiful human.
Huh.
And he communicated with you that way. And
that's so amazing.
How it used to be. Think of it.
Yeah, that is so amazing. I tell you what, folks, I love this. I love this place. I love this world. I love all of you people out there. And I'm telling you, if we could actually just, if you guys could experience what me and Barbara's actually talking about, just once. That's all it's going to take, is you just experienced it just one time. And you'll understand why it is that we're so passionate about what we do and say here on the Knights of the Round Table. Because it is important. It's our future of our humanity, our children, our children's children. You know, we got an opportunity right now because we've got access to all this information. We've got access to each other unlike we've ever had before. I mean, there might have been a time when we didn't even have to open our mouths to talk to one another, but we're not back there yet. Right now, we got this tool where now we can connect with each other clear across international boundaries. And we got an option to either allow things to go the way they do or to make things start going on the path that we choose. And if you want to control some people, the easiest way to do it is just keep them fighting with each other. Keep them fighting. As long as they're fighting amongst each other, that gives you the authority because they want protection to come in there and control them. But what happens when the fight's over? And there's no longer a need for the lawman or the government. And it's just we the people doing what we should have been doing all along, being the good caretakers of the earth and each other. These stories that I'm talking about right now, they would be a common deal, a commonplace issue every day. You'd experience a miracle like you wouldn't believe if you could just get there once and feel it just one time. And then if you told your friends about that, it'd be like that little frog down there. He told his friends, all his friends were hanging out right there in front of me. I know you might think I'm crazy because you haven't experienced it yet, but the day you do, when you see a deer or a rabbit that doesn't run from you and understands that your true intentions aren't there to hurt them, and you feel like you are on a level of communication with nature that you've never had the honor of experiencing before in your life. Get there once is all it's going to take for you to be a believer in what it is I'm talking about. There's so much more to this world than meets the eye, and if we can get there and we can bring other people to that realization that the world isn't the bad place that the media keeps telling you about. It's not the bad place that they want us to live in so that they can control us for our fear of everything that surrounds us. Some people are afraid of snakes. Some people are afraid of spiders. But even the snakes and the spiders have a job in this world to do, just like you have a job to do. And if you ever decide to do that job that you were meant to do to begin with, this world would be so incredible. It would be so beautiful. And everything that you need, food-wise, shelter-wise, nature will provide to you with abundance and be happy to do so. The animals are talking to you. The waterways are talking to you. The trees and all of nature has been talking to you, trying to say, help, help. And it's time for you to listen. It's time for you to listen to each other. It's time for you to sit down, put down your weapons of war, and make this world what it could be. I don't know what more to say, but I'll keep saying it as long as it comes to me, as long as I have a breath. Because after what I've witnessed in my life and the friends that I've come in contact with because of this technology that we have access to, I choose to use it in the right way. And I choose to use it to talk to you, to give you hope. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. So, Patty, or Barbara, sorry, I did it again.
That's okay, we're so much alike.
Yeah, we're down there again. I hate this part of the show where we got to leave up out of here, but, you know, I got work to do, and probably you got work to do, and we got people to see and places to go and life to experience. But once again, it's been an amazing show, and I just love these days that we get to spend talking to each other.
I feel the same way, Joseph, and thank you for having me on. I love our shows together. Thank you.
You got any last words of wisdom for everybody?
Well, I just, you know, I think it's just the same word, you know, just find the love in your heart, because that's the most essential thing. And I feel Creator is is waiting for us to come to that love, unconditional love. I'm going to start saying that because it's, to me, love is, you know, people have their perceptions about love, their perspective of what love is, what it should be, how they should get love, and from someone and so forth. But I'm looking at unconditional love because I believe that unconditional love is the key. That means I have no agenda, I have no conditions about my love when I give it to you. I just love you. Or if you, you know, will give your love to me, if that's, you know, what's happening, I don't expect anything else. I just want to be embraced by that love, and I want you to be embraced by my unconditional love. And it's coming at you anyway, whether you're going to accept it or not. So I feel that Creator, I said this the other day, but I feel that we are Creator's hope for this world.
I believe that too, with everything that I am. You know, before I leave up out of here, the last message I'm going to put out, there's a, Stephen Gibbons posted a picture in the chat room, and it has a phrase on there. It says, start by doing what's necessary, then what's possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible. See, people think that this mess that we're in is impossible to fix. I don't believe that with anything. I believe that if we do what's necessary and then do what is possible for us, that suddenly we are proving that the impossible is, it's just a myth. Thanks, Stephen, for that. That is a brilliant find. Once again, we got awesome people that come to watch this, listen to this show, and you know, interact with us in the chat room. Just
yeah, I just want to add to, because we started out this show talking about.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked.
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers, by hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines, you call us scenes, the footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
lad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
He is, King Shazir the Turtle. All those working to serve the Turtle and the Knights of the Round Table.